Well, welcome. I appreciate it. I know you had problems getting in here, but I'm glad you finally made it. I am pronouncing your name correctly, Rabu.
That's good accent.
Well, it's
Parisian.
Very. It's called a Kansas accent. Somebody from Kansas always blows French pronunciation and sometimes English. So that's what I do. These are some of these are really stunning and remarkable photographs. I've seen this one many times. This has been this is the one about the man on a construction site painting the
Eiffel Tower.
Oh, it's on the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, and it was first published in 1953 in Life magazine. It was actually my first picture ever published, and I remember the caption. It was "Blithful or Blithful on the Eiffel."
Well, this is this has been printed over and over. This is one of your most famous photographs, isn't it?
Well, it's a kind of mascot photo, a kind of because. But after the publication in Life, then it remained in a drawer. Nobody published it until about 5-10 years ago, when a gallery printed a postcard and a poster with it.
Well, let's go back and tell me about yourself a little bit, and the events that led up to you becoming a major photographer.
A photographer, I would just say. Today at 30, if you have not succeeded as a photographer, it's hopeless. Myself, at 30, I hardly shot one few pictures. I was a mechanic engineer, probably a bad engineer, and one day I was more and more interested in photography during the weekend. And I met Henri Quatre-Bresson, famous French, very good, but he kept telling me, keep your job, don't get away. And one day I took 1 week leave from the factory where I was working as an engineer to photograph a festival drama. Then they are still waiting for me. I never went back. At the beginning it was hard. I was a freelance. Then I joined Magnum. And I started to travel, and very shortly after, I took a Land Rover and drove from Paris to Calcutta. It took me 6 months and a lot of little problems. Only two big problems, to get out of Paris and to get in Calcutta, as far as finding the road. But then I stayed 1 year in India, living among Indian friends. I like to, you know, I was shy, I'm still a bit shy, and I don't like to meet too many people, so I stayed among Indian friends, and I tried to make home wherever I went. That's why I stayed a year in India. And then from India, I went to China in 57. I had left France in 54, and I stayed about 2 years away. And I was one of the first at that time Westerners getting into China in 57. There was no French embassy, there was no Westerners there. Chinese thought I was a Russian, because only a few Russians were around. Then I went on, coming back, traveling a little bit. Yes, traveling more and more.
I can see by your book that you've been all around the world. Well, first, tell me about Magnum. I know that is a... it's kind of like a photographer's cooperative, isn't it?
It is a cooperative, which means it's owned by every Magnum, by every photographer. I joined Magnum in 1952, 53, but I left Magnum in 1979, but I left to be more independent and to shoot more pictures because I was very much involved in administration of Magnum. Now I left my archive. I'm in very, very good terms with Magnum, but I'm on my own. But Magnum is a group of photographers who try to put the quality above the economic problems, which I think is a good thing in this commercial world. Everybody is, I think, to fight for quality, and not only photographic quality, but a kind of ethics in our profession, which is a very important thing to keep this, to keep up, to keep the standard, to raise the ethic, the cultural level, the humanistic level of relation. You know, when you travel and shoot pictures, it's as important to the way you travel, the way to meet people, the way to behave. I think it's nearly as important as shooting the pictures.
I understand how a professional photographer of, say, portraits can make a living. I can understand how a news photographer such as yourself can make a living if he works on a staff, for example, with Life magazine or something like that. But how do you do it when you are a freelance news photographer? And I would consider you a news photographer, right?
No, I'm not news photographer. I did photograph news and for magazine and newspaper, but I would never. I have shot very few, very rarely news, but I would rather call a documentary photographer. No, I've been a poor journalist, but I've been involved and happened to come across, find myself involved in events and meeting and photographing important people or important events. But basically, as a freelance, I think it's the best challenge because you have to shoot good picture, the best picture you can. You have to be in the right time, at the right place, not especially for news, but instead of going in a desert of Australia and photographing clouds and trees or sand, better to be in a people's commune in China or in a village in India, which reflects some of the problem of our world. And this, as a freelance, you have to choose the right place and the right time. Otherwise, your picture won't be published and you would not make another trip. So I kept being freelance, and I'm still more than ever choosing the subject, the countries. And I think for photography, the most first thing is to choose rightly, to choose where to go and the time.
Photography, outside of the technical aspects of getting the focus and the f-stop and all of that material correct, it's a lot of timing and luck too, isn't it?
A lot of
timing and
timing.
Luck.
You're sure.
For example, the famous picture on the Eiffel Tower, you had to snap that at the right time, and it's something that you can't plan.
No, certainly not. But I think it's like one has to have an obsession, a passion. It's not a profession. It's much more a passion and obsession. It's a visual approach. Like people writing or people who are singing or music, they play music all the time, 12 hours a day. And for visual people who draw, paint, they keep every day. And for photography, it's the same. Then you become to have an obsession of visual form and content. And right then it becomes an reflex, an instinct. And when you shoot, you forget all what you've learned for 40 years or 30 years. And it's like, a sculpture with a painter with his hand. You know, in half a second, he draws a line. But this is a result of 30, 40 years of learning, repeating, and knowing what he wants to do and to show, and the same for us.
And yet an amateur often can create a stunning photograph.
Sure, but that, because by sheer luck, you know, it's very well known. If you put a monkey in front of a typewriter, and a scientist told me, and without joking, that a monkey in front of a typewriter, after so many million of hours, would type Hamlet.
Now,
yes,
on.
It is. It is proved by the. You have 26.
But too many variables. I mean, he may have all the words that are in Hamlet, but how is he going to put them together in the proper sequence?
It's a wrong demonstration, how the Greek call it, because it would take as many hours for anybody to find Hamlet in this writing, which for a million or billion of hours. But by sheer luck, obviously monkey would take pictures, by sheer luck he would have something. But even so, I think there is less likely, because you have billion of position of your camera in the space where to put it and where to shoot it. So, no, the luck, the chance, if you don't look for it, if you... is not working for you. We are not luck on our side. If you don't look for it, and to look for it, you have to be outdoors a lot, and you have to know what you are looking for, and to look in the two sense of the word. You have to really find what you're looking for, and then you have to open your eyes like a child, because most people today, they look with their intellect. There is an African proverb, which says foreigners see only what they know. And most people see only what they know. If you would ask in this building how many people know what's above the door they come across every morning, they wouldn't be able to describe, because they get in with a... I could see them this morning looking at their shoes or looking in the back of their mind about their problem. A child will open his eyes. Or an African coming for the first time. And we have to look the world like with the eyes of a child, but also with the culture that we have. We can't be somebody else. We carry our own culture. I don't believe people would say to photograph, well, Muslim, they have to become Muslim. I can't become a Chinese or a Japanese or a Muslim. I am a French, and I am such a background and such a culture. And I have to see people and to understand people, but from keeping my own personality, and that's what makes, I think, observation, and I in great literature, from Tolstoy to Proust, it's all based on observation. Nothing is created from a blank page. It's based on observation, and what we're doing, we have a very simple mechanic tool, which is like a pen. It's as easy to use as a typewriter for a writer. And today, everything is automatic, but we have to use this tool, which is a mechanical reproduction, by using the power we have to choose what we look and to frame it.
Now, Monsieur Ribot, you said a moment ago, you just said, you repeated yourself, that you have to know what you want to shoot and know where to look. Now, you are in New York for the opening of your exhibit and to talk about your book. So you have been in New York for some time, and I assume that you have your camera equipment with you.
Yeah.
While you have been in New York, where have you looked? What have you wanted to photograph here?
Well, going from one place to another, and even this morning with the flood, and the last few days, the other side of the park also there was a flood, and New York is for me a fascinating city, a visual, a city landscape, fascinating. And in my show, I see pictures of New York, there are two or three, one shot which I did on Thanksgiving parade from France, from Berlin's window, and those huge Snoopies in the air, and with the skyline of New York is, for me, a kind of symbol of the extraordinary landscape of New York, but also the extraordinary, the fun, the sense of life, of energy, which is in the city, which I am always fascinated by, and also gives a great energy. Also, the scene in a corner of a street, you may have a steam going up, looking like a small atomic bomb. If you don't know what it is, it covers three or four floors of a building, and people going through like in a mysterious movie. And then you, one block away from that, you have the most elegant and sophisticated shops and. And it's fascinating at every corner of the street, in the subway, in the buses, the people that you see. I mean,
are people ever suspicious? Do they see a man walking around with a camera, and maybe you'll take their picture, and do they wonder,
yes,
what's up? Who is this guy?
Yes, but I mean, with a little experience, you know very well that if somebody doesn't want to be photographed, I just walk away. I don't photograph somebody who doesn't want to be photographed. And if you do it quickly, and you know, what disturbs people is not so much to be photographed, but being looked at. If you look at someone, and there's an old French expression, if you look at someone, even if you don't have a camera, the person will answer, you want a picture of me? And but when you photograph somebody, you don't have to look at him. If I look over there, I see what you're doing, and see who you are, and I take a picture. It's a look to somebody which is disturbing. And and I try always to look at something, not at the people I photograph. I look at what they look at. For instance, if they look at building a monument or anything. I look at it in the same direction, but I take pictures of them.
Not too long ago, I noticed a man who claims he was... There was a famous photograph that was taken in Times Square after World War II, when there was a big celebration, and it showed a sailor kissing a girl.
I know the picture.
I can't remember the
photographer. Yes, I know, the American photographer.
Yeah, I can't remember the photographer's name. But
I
anyway,
know the picture very well.
It was in Life magazine. It was a famous picture. It's been printed in many anthologies. And last week, a man who claims he was that sailor filed
suit
claiming that he wanted some of the profits from that photograph.
Oh, that's a problem, I know.
Has that ever happened to you where somebody comes back and says, hey, my picture was taken, I didn't know it?
Well, it's a legal important problem, what we call the right of human being on his own image. And I understand the problem. I believe myself that in public places, people should admit that they can be photographed. They can be seen, they can be watched, they can be photographed, they can be filmed. Except, and they can use those photographs if you do not put them in a context. If you photograph a guy in the street drinking a glass, whatever it is, and you publish the pictures and as an illustration of alcoholism or of anything, this guy has the right to sue you, to sue mainly the publication because you interpret wrongly. Or if you photograph a lady or with a fur coat and she looks a bit ridiculous, and you put a caption and you make fun, then you're liable. But if you photograph someone like the sailor, especially after the time, maybe if he was not kissing his right girlfriend or his wife, and the next week it was published, he would have the right, probably, to claim. But 40 years later, I don't think...
I doubt if he could even prove it.
Yes.
I mean, there must have been a quarter of a million people in Times
Everybody
Square.
Everybody was kissing each other, and the lawyer could very well prove easily that there was nothing wrong for a man kissing any girl on that night.
Well, he just wanted a piece of the action. He knew that photograph
made
a lot of money.
A lot.
Now, there is a raging debate. Well, it's not a raging debate so much anymore, but it has been debated about whether photography is really art.
It's a stupid question in a way. I mean, it's not a bit. What is art? This table, an armchair, a beautiful armchair, is a beautiful piece of craftsmanship and can be art. I think people who speak too much of art or creativity or poetry are the less creative. I don't think it's by saying that we are artists that we become artists. I think it's a way of expressing, and all art, all media is a way to express oneself. You try to be competent, professional, and you put your own personality. And after that, maybe many years after, indeed, I think some photographs will be pieces of art, so-called, quote-unquote, but doesn't mean much. But I don't think a photographer who starts taking pictures is an artist. Certainly not more than you or anybody in the street who may be an artist in a way.
What camera do you use?
You know, today it's like more or less like cars. They all have similar standards.
Yeah.
And you have to forget a camera. You have to have the simplest camera, less gadgets as possible, and a good camera. And I use Leicas for a long time because they are solid, because they don't break if they fall on the floor. But they have about the same same advantages as most of the other cameras. Maybe they are much, a little more strong. But I use, let's say, yeah, it's very important. It's a small camera. For the kind of work I'm doing, if I would shoot architecture, I do shoot architecture even this way, but if I would shoot indoors with a tripod and a large size 4x5-inch camera, it would be a different equipment. But the kind of pictures, not especially because I am shooting for a magazine, but in the street, in life, you have to be very unconspicuous.
Now, you have a number of pictures that were taken indoors. Do you use flash?
No. I can. I did some, but those pictures were shot indoors. But now, with fast film, we can shoot indoors without flashing.
Tell me about this photograph. This is one of the most intriguing photographs. I'm glad I turned to this one. It's an absolutely fascinating photograph with a... Well, she's a very intriguing-looking young woman there without any clothes on.
She's reflected in a mirror. It's in Prague. She's the daughter of a good friend of mine. And I wanted to shoot. It's the first time shot a nude picture. She undressed. She was lying on a couch, and there was a mirror. I didn't change anything. And the broken mirror reflected the scene and the nude girl. But my style, you see, is to keep a certain distance. I think not to intrude too much, not to show a fist on your face, the subject. But also like in a picture that you see a lot of things. There's a cat and everything happened. I had a tripod, but the fire was littered, so the cat came in front of the fire. And the girl had a book and
what a lucky shot.
Yeah, I was lucky, indeed.
That's a remarkable photograph. An interesting thing about photographs is that you can take time with them and study them. When you have this picture in Ghana, for example, there are so many people and so many elements to the picture, you can leap past it very fast, but then you can turn back to it and just look at all of the elements in the photograph. It's fascinating how it's what I'm trying to do.
But when you have many elements, what's very important is to organize it. The structure, the composition, which I think, like in drawing, in a visual form, it's very important.
This one about the young woman with the flower in front of the bayonets in Washington during a peace demonstration. Now that is very much a news.
Yeah, it has. Yes, on that day it was very much a news coverage, but it became, you see, not. It was not published at that time as a news picture, but it became a little, somehow a symbol image of this period and this wave of the young people.
Well, these are remarkable photographs, and I know these were some of the early photographs of China after the Western. Westerners were allowed in, and I know these are of historical significance. And some of these are remarkable photographs, absolutely fascinating.
I have few more. I have quite a few more in the show at ICP, in Midtown ICP, which are not in this book. More recent and pictures different from those.
Well, Monsieur Ribot, I thank you very much for coming in, and I hope that you find while you're staying here in New York. Many, many photographs.
Oh, yeah. I keep shooting.
Thank you very much.